Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with CA on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing how we experience life and spirituality. And we are coming to you live on tape, as Stephen Colbert would say. And I've decided to just like be totally upfront about that. Susan and I have been juggling schedules. Susan Dugan, who is my guest today, and just a whole lot of other things, you know, going on with, you know, stuff, just the way life works. So when we can grab an hour to record a show, we're going to do it. So that's exactly what we did. You're probably hearing this like a few days or maybe a week after we actually recorded it. But in any case, we had been talking and I've been telling Susan that based on her suggestion of listening to the workshop by Ken Wapnick, the 2003 workshop called Healing, Hearing the Melody. She had suggested that. We've been listening to that for about a month on this show. And so when I asked her, well, what should we talk about when we get together, when we do, you know, our live on tape show? And she said, you know, we bounced off a couple of ideas, some of what she told me very gently. Well, CA, those are pretty complex ideas. And that's okay. I mean, I totally get it. It was just something I was really getting into. But in any case, we thought it would be really nice to just be able to go with exactly what we've been talking about and some of the ideas that Ken talks about in that workshop. And Susan then turned me on to the idea that there's actually a series, an 8-part series of videos that are made for YouTube that were actually excerpts of that workshop. And what they're called on YouTube, if you want to go check it out, it's called Music, Melos, and Miracles, The Art of Listening. And like I said, it's really an eight-part series that they took excerpts of Ken actually talking about the workshop that we've been listening to. So that was actually very fun for me too, Susan, because, you know, I always imagine Ken, you know, standing up at the lectern when I'm listening to his stuff. But since I've just listened to that workshop and then I was watching those YouTube videos, it was so interesting and fun to, like, literally see him saying the same thing. And so it was wonderful as repetition, but it was just nice. So thank you for turning me on to those, because I have watched YouTube videos with Ken, but I don't do it very often. And I kind of forget, I guess, that the foundation has made so many of those YouTube videos.
Well, the foundation has made a lot of them, and then I think other people have, you know, excerpted things too. But this in this series, that I think it might be excerpts from that actual workshop. I mean, it's a workshop that they're excerpting, and I would assume that it's that one. But
well, and Susan, you know what? I mean, it says there that it's excerpts, and I can tell you from listening to it, I mean, it's exactly the same.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
The only thing that's a little different is every once in a while, I mean, you can tell they've put some pieces together. And even though it's 8 parts, I think each of the parts are only maybe 10 minutes long. So it's not anywhere near the length of the actual workshop.
Right.
But every once in a while, ideas seem like they've changed them around, too. Like, I know exactly the way Ken gave the example. I mean, it's like word for word, and it's exactly the same intonation. So I know it's from the workshop, but then they'll put something out. They'll juxtaposition something else.
Well, it may have been edited. You know, that's very possible that it was edited for that.
Yeah. But I mean, it still has great cohesiveness.
It's a great summary anyway.
It is. It's just that after listening to the workshop, I go, oh, wait a minute now. And by the way, I haven't listened to the whole workshop yet. And so all of a sudden they're introducing an idea right next to something I have heard. So I'm going, ah, this is where we're going. So it's fun. And I love it. So thank you so much, because every little bit helps.
Oh, well, you know, I didn't have time, before this to go back and try to, you know, find the, I do have that CD. I recommended it. And it was one of the ones that I, early on in my experience with the course, it had been recommended to me. And, you know, I began to listen to and really immerse myself in. And I was just, it was so powerful and really speaks to the practice of A Course in Miracles, you know, of forgiveness and what that's like to try to, you know, live within our relationships. And but we just moved, and so, you know, I sort of put all of my workshops and CD sets of Ken's in one area, but I just didn't have time to kind of dig it out. So I was glad that the YouTube, that the summary was there, that I could refresh my memory of it. But it is so powerful, and I think really does, again, he uses the symbolism of music in the workshop to really describe how we need to try to listen to each other in our relationships so that we can really hear the call for love in ourselves. Really, it's always my own call for love, but we hear it. It seems to be in our experience that we're experiencing it in someone else. and so when we can kind of step back from our own neediness in relationships and listen and truly listen to the other person, what Ken is saying is that there is this, he's using the imagery of music, but there is this melody within all of us that is this deep yearning to find our way home and, to discover through our relationships that maybe I'm wrong about myself, that I really am not the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And of course, what we're usually communicating to each other is, no, you are the home of evil, darkness, and sin. It's in you. It's not in me. We're in competition for getting rid of the guilt that we feel within over believing we're separate from God. But we're all carrying that burden of guilt. And when we can, try to step back with our inner teacher into our right mind with Jesus and look at the other person, experience the other person as he does, which would mean, hearing that call for love and answering it with the description of the workshop says the gentle hands of forgiveness touching that wound, that malos that we're all carrying with forgiveness. Then we're communicating a different song. We're communicating the forgotten song of our one loving heart that is, within which we are all still cradled within God, right? And so that's really the message that we're all trying to ultimately learn, but we have to really actively listen for that, and we have to let go first and ask for help to let go of our egos, to let go of our neediness for the other person to fulfill something, to give me what I want or to behave in a way that I want them to, rather than allowing them to also be on their journey of forgiveness, which is, trying to find their way home, which we don't know what that looks like, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could look like really bad behavior.
Right.
We all really, may have to take a lot of detours on our journey because we're so afraid of that forgotten song of the true loving nature. We now think that we're fugitives from love, and we're terrified of it. So what we're trying to do in our relationships is learn ourselves, our own worthiness, through learning that the other person deserves that kind attention too, and that we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it may look different in form, what's happening, and that we all have we share the same interest of trying to find our way home to the innocence that we are still, regardless of this fantasy of our, crazy mad guilt of separation.
Right. Well, and I'll tell you what, per usual, I feel like he keeps bringing up things that I'm reading in other books at the same time. And so it kind of goes back to that same idea. He introduced the workshop by saying, this isn't going to sound any different than anything else you've ever heard. And, that's it. Oh, it's a new workshop. It's a new workshop, new ideas. And it's like, no, it's not really a new idea. We believe that we separated. We believe that it's possible to create a whole world. We've done a really bad job of it. We know we've done a bad job of it, but we're scared to death at what would happen if we let it go. And so, the way he compares all of this to music is just, I think, such a great analogy because, like, for instance, one of the things he mentioned several times is the whole idea of, you know, a great piece of music, and then the conductor has to get in and interfere, you know, has to fix it, has to make it better, has to make it more lively, or has to make it sadder or whatever. And he said sometimes they're just mangling the music. And all they really have to do is get out of the way and allow the music to be what it is.
That's right.
You know, and to me, that's once again such a great analogy, even though when I look at my own life, you know, because then he applies that right back and says, you know, we just need to not interfere. You know, we need to, on whatever level, keep asserting to ourselves and other people that what you think this is not true. You know, you are not the home of evil, darkness, and sin. And yet, you know, I mean, like, for instance, what I'm thinking is, it's easy to say maybe don't interfere or don't get involved or whatever, but the real line, the practicality of it is so difficult. And in fact, I was just involved in a situation where some people were trying to make a fairly important decision about a loved one, an older loved one, and what was going to happen. And, you know, it was so obvious standing from the outside, like, oh my God, what a mistake they're making, you know? And it's like, are they really thinking this is the way this is going to happen? And, you know, I'd even said to somebody, well, has that person in 40 years ever demonstrated that ability or skill? Mm-hmm. And she said, no. And I said, well, then why do the people involved think that suddenly she's gonna do that? And she goes, I agree with you, but there's nothing I can do about it. But what made me think of it is just, it is, I mean, on one hand, from the outside, it's like, yeah, this just seems like such craziness. Why are you believing the impossible? And yet, what really, I think, came out of it for me is recognizing, but stepping in and saying something just like that wasn't going to change their minds. They needed to do it. They need, even if it's a mistake.
Absolutely.
That's their learning. They need to do it. It wasn't loving of me. It was only judgmental of me.
Right.
To stand on the outside and decide what was the right thing or the wrong thing to do. And it's hard because you realize the consequences seem so serious in the dream, in the illusion. But on the other hand, you know, just recognizing this is one more situation where you think you know the answer and you don't. In fact, one of the other analogies that Ken gives in this workshop is that you kind of see this thread hanging out and you think you can fix it or you think you can clip it off or you think you can do something with it. And he goes, but you are clueless. He doesn't say that, but you are clueless about the entire tapestry. You have no idea what the real purpose of that one little thread might be in the overall purpose. And in his case, he's saying, like, the overall atonement. Do you really think by viewing this one little thread that you have any idea about what the whole picture looks like? Now, when you put it that way, it's like, well, no, I guess I don't. But it's also that thing that we walk this tightrope of not wanting our loved ones to suffer or not wanting our loved ones or ourselves to, you know, we just want to get right to the goal instead of making mistakes. But the very detours, those mistakes are what finally kind of maybe lead to the gentle dream of going, oh my God, I didn't do such a good job in this creation of a world.
Right, right. Well, I mean, you said you packed a lot into that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just looked.
No, but it's good. It's good. It's all good stuff, and that's exactly right. So, you know, it's really the, you know, it is the height of arrogance to think that we know what's in someone else's best interest when we don't even know our own, you know?
Right.
I mean, again, you know, the Course is always so consistent in saying, you know, that the mind that I need to work on, the mind that needs changing is mine. I know that if I'm conflicted and again, feeling needy, needing this other person to do something, feeling that they're making a mistake, feeling that I need to intervene, all of those kinds of, you know, urges that we have in our relationships, that's always a red flag.
Yeah.
that I'm choosing my ego, you know, and we really do need to, you know, it's my mind then in need of healing. It's, you know, that's my call for love. And you know, I need to answer my own melas before I can hear anyone else's. And so it's really that, you know, seeing that I've chosen my ego and that it's not serving me. And as you were saying, it's not serving anyone because we don't know what's in anyone else's best interest in their ultimate atonement path. And you know, again, we don't even really most of the time know our own. And so we have to be really, you know, that's our clue that we need help from our inner teacher to get our own ego out of the way. And again, look at this person through the eyes of love instead of fear and urgency and need, our own neediness. Ken says in those in that workshop that, you know, our need blocks our hearing, our listening. We can't hear over the raucous shrieks of our own needs, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, are believing that we're right. And so we first have to recognize that urgency that I'm feeling, that wanting to intervene, that needing the other person to do the right thing, you know, by our standards. And even if it looks in form like what they're doing is may hurt them in form, that's really not our call, and it's really not loving. And it may be just what they need to eventually, you know, find the light. And we can't judge that. I mean, certainly we've had our own detours and continue to have them in which we, you know, we make some pretty bad mistakes, right? Or in the world of form, it looks as though we're, you know, we're making mistakes. And in the spiritual journey, it looks as though we're taking detours. But that, again, in the overall atonement path, may be just what we needed to finally let it go, you know, to finally feel tired enough of the ego's game to choose the light. And so it's really the being very sensitive. Again, you know, forgiveness is really looking at when I'm upset. It's really not about them, and the answer is really not about them either. The answer is to step back in my right mind with Jesus and to allow, you know, to turn away from the ego. And then once I begin to make that shift to the Holy Spirit's perception, Jesus's perception, which is that, you know, which is the whole picture, as you're saying, he and also is that we really can't make any mistakes in a dream, right?
Right.
So at that point, then we're able in our relationships to shift the, you know, and to allow that those gentle hands of forgiveness that Ken talks about in that workshop to touch the other person, which means I accept you, I love you no matter what you do, you know? And then if there is something that would be helpful to do, it will just flow through us, but there won't be any urgency for the other person to do what we think is right. And we'll love them no matter what. And on whatever level is most kind, we'll communicate that. They will on some level get that message, even if they don't seem to get it in form. And even if they're angry with us, you know, for not, for whatever reason, it doesn't matter because really, again, they're in, you know, they're in their dream of exile. They're part of the dream, and you know, their part seems to involve a different direction, maybe, and that's not up to us, you know. Mm-hmm. The main thing is that we all share the same interest of being on the journey and finding our way home, and every heart that flees from God and seems to come here really has that ultimate goal too. And in the end, we all made it home. So we don't have to stress about it.
Right. Well, and there's something, I so wish Ken was still here, because this is the question I would ask him.
Yes.
And yet, I know, I kind of know what the answer is, which is always our only choice, really, is to choose the path of forgiveness, to choose Jesus as our teacher. That's the only viable
right.
question or answer that we have. But like, for instance, in this workshop, when this is what I would ask Ken, he says, you know, when somebody's doing something and you're getting upset about it or you think it ought to be different, he said, you don't need to judge it. You just need to join them there.
Right.
And see, that's what, like, I mean, truthfully drives me crazy, because the best way I can say it is it feels to me like the emperor's new clothes. So you're going along in life, and whether it's something political or whether it's something very, very personal in your life, you know, a personal relationship, somebody says something or does something that just feels crazy. Mm-hmm. And you know, I want to go, but the emperor isn't wearing any clothes, you know? And so when Ken says that, he goes, you know, this isn't up to you to judge it, or to get so involved in what the form is. Every time you get involved in the form, then you're saying it's real. You know, that's what you're doing. You're reinforcing that the dream is the reality. The dream is real. You know, you're not denying the mad, you know, the tiny mad idea. Like he says that over and over. It's not the tiny mad idea of separation. It's that you believed it.
Right.
You know, you forgot. You forgot to just laugh. So, but when he says join them, there's part of me that wants to go, how do I do that, Ken? I mean, how do you join them? What does that mean?
The way you join them is you join Jesus.
Okay. I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, our only real relationship, remember, the only special relationship is with our ego, and the only holy relationship is with Jesus, Holy Spirit in the mind, you know? So we don't have to worry about what it means to join them. We have to realize that we have refused to, I am blocked right now and refuse to join Jesus. I want to have it my way. I think it's the emperor's new clothes. I think right. I know better than God.
And all these other people.
And all these other people, what needs to happen here. And you know, that doesn't, once we are willing to really join, I mean, that's how we join. There is
okay.
no.
Thank you. That helps.
Well, bodies can't join. You know, the Course says that over and over. And so it's all happening at the level of the mind. That said, once we are willing to make that shift and truly experience it, so which means the conflict, the worry, the stress, the, you know, they're wrong, all of the judgment will slip away, because we can't have those and be in our right mind. I mean, that they don't exist in our right mind. So we know when we return to peace that we've chosen the right teacher. At that point, if there's anything that would be helpful in form, it doesn't mean that we never do anything in form. We might. We don't know. There might be something helpful in form. There might be something helpful to say. But whatever it would just happen, would just come out of you, and it wouldn't, and without any need for it to, you know, to affect the other person or not. It would just be loving, and it would be truly loving, and that would be that. You know, it wouldn't be any big deal.
Okay. Yeah, and that makes sense, because I remember Ken saying the extension of forgiveness, the extension of love through you, the extension of the miracle is not your responsibility.
That's right. Not our job. Our role is so small in this, you know. It's really just to recognize, this is my own mind in need of healing. There's my malos, you know. There's my call for love. It seems to be coming from the other person, but the fact that I'm really upset about this and preoccupied with it, that's a sure clue that it's my call for love. Who else is there?
Right.
So that's when I need to, the emperor has no clothes. Well, you know, the ego has no clothes, right?
Right.
In the ego. We believe in something that doesn't exist. You know, it's all a big smoke and mirrors game, and you know, that's not our experience. And I you know, until you're at the very top of the ladder and entering the real world, that will not be your experience. But the way that we climb the ladder is through forgiveness, is through this process of recognizing our own blocks, our own choice for the ego, and recognizing that it's causing us pain. And we have another choice. You know, we have another teacher we can join with that will bring us peace and brings peace to every mind through forgiveness. You know, the Course says that. So we don't need to know how that happens. We can't, from our perspective, still here in bodies in a dream. You know, until we're not dreaming anymore, then it all vanishes. But for now, the earthly form of love, the earthly form of joining with the forgotten song is forgiveness. You know?
Yeah. Well, and that just makes so much sense. It truly does. Just even thinking, because I was getting so hung up on how do I join them in their craziness?
Right.
I don't want to join in this craziness.
No.
You know, I want to be outside of it. But
right.
It's not. It's joining with Jesus or joining with the Holy Spirit or your source or whatever you want to see it. Joining in that sense.
Yes, you're joining at the level of the mind or above the battleground, however you know, the quiet center, however, of course, uses all these great images, but you're stepping back from, you're asking to step outside the dream of time and space, where all this, you know, everything here seems so fraught, you know, all the time.
Right.
And it seems like we're confronted by an endless, you know, endless bombardment of problems and craziness, and you know, and that do, as like in Alice in Wonderland, seem to get curiouser and curiouser, don't they? You know,
right?
Stranger and stranger, but you know, that's something that we're choosing to make real. We are choosing to be fixated on the bombardment, you know, on the external parade of problems. And we love it when we see them, you know, as caused by other people and by other people's bad decisions. And you know, we know that we're active and willing participants when we're you know, wanting to join, right, get right on the battlefield and you know, defend our position or enlighten others or, you know, help them find the way. And, you know, that, I mean, that's just a sure clue that we've chosen the ego. You know, we've become mindless again. We've forgotten that we're a decision-making mind that has another choice to join with a part of the mind that is always peaceful and always sees everyone as equally deserving of finding their way home and returning to love. And also knows that everybody does in the end, you know. We don't have to really stress and worry. This whole illusion of this being played out in this in time that the ego has, you know, on this huge tragic timeline that the ego has that never ends well for any body that seems to come here, right? Mm-hmm. You know, all of that is just, it's really just ultimately nonsense. And so we learn that forgiveness opportunity by forgiveness opportunity, healing invitation by healing invitation, which is really just, you know, watching. You said earlier, it's no different in this workshop than anything else. He's using different imagery, but it always comes down as a practice to the same thing of you know, the steps of forgiveness. That's our only role, our only real purpose that's meaningful here, is to use everything that happens in our lives as a classroom and a curriculum in which we get to make another choice, right? A healing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, another, but there again, I never get tired of listening to his workshops. And I'm always hearing something new. Like in this one, one of the analogies that I loved, because I think truthfully, it's hard to even imagine, like when you say we are one, what exactly does that look like? What exactly does that feel like? And I recognize we're just never going to understand that,
right,
in a separated universe. But one of the things he said, and I kind of laughed when he said it, is he said, you know, our ultimate fear is letting the song, that inner song, be who we are, because we like being an individual note.
Right. right.
And all of a sudden I said, that's really true. We all are notes, or we think we are, and we don't want to disappear into the song. We want to stand out as a note.
Right. In another context, Ken has talked about, you know, the orchestra, the foundation, and used an analogy with the foundation of, you know, that they try to make their goal at the foundation, Ken and Gloria, as you know, all joining together as an orchestra, and you know that no one one voice or one instrument would be any more important than any other. You know, that we shared, that there was that principle of shared interests.
Uh-huh.
And you know, yes, but we all want to be soloists, right? we want to be the star. We're the heroes of our dream, right? In our own estimation. And really what we're trying to learn is that despite the many, you know, the many different tones and echoes and, you know, the sounds of all of the different instruments, and the notes, the different notes and the different keys, you know, we really all share the same interest of really finding and remembering that same forgotten song, which is that we're loved and loving and one with God. And, you know, that's everybody's journey, everybody's goal, everybody's purpose. And everybody has the same decision-making mind and the same, you know, the same wrong mind and the same right mind, but in the same decision-making power to choose again, you know, to learn that they are not the home of evil, darkness, and sin, as we were saying earlier, you know? And so really it's just, you know, it's beginning to recognize that selfishness, that neediness in ourselves to be the, you know, to be the most important voice, right? The most important instrument that, and to go our own way. That's really what got us in trouble with God, or, you know, we believe got us in trouble with God in the first place, even though God is still singing the same song with the one child that we are. Just, you know, not one note in heaven's song was missed, right? Just belief that we defected from God and struck off on our own as soloists. Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, even if our personalities are such that we don't want to be the star, we still want to be a note.
We still want to be unique and heard.
And or self, right. You know, I'm going to go to Maslow's thing of being self-sufficient or self-actualized.
That's right.
Even
that's
if you don't want to be, you know, like on the world stage, you somehow want to still think you've got your individual identity. I still want to be a note.
Even
you know?
If we want to defect, even if we feel that it's necessary, you know, we're very introverted and feel that it's necessary. Well, I see both sides of this in myself.
Yeah.
Right? But you know, I also am pretty introverted in how I have to replenish myself. And so, you know, but that's the same thing too. It's saying I can't be peaceful because these people around me are making too much noise and I can't hear myself think. And, you know, I have to have, I have to go off by myself, and you know that it's just the other side of the same coin, right? So
it is
my own solo, right?
Right.
Without all this cacophony of noise that from all these other, you know, voices, and so it is the same thing. I mean, we're trying. We want to be unique. That was our belief that, you know, this experiment in individuality. What would it be like to be different from God, to strike off on our own and create a world and a life opposite to God in every way, including, you know, including mortality, right? Which we believe is the cost of our experiment. The final cost is punishment.
Right.
And, you know, but is it serving us? Is it bringing us any peace? I mean, we really, you know, if you're paying attention, and especially if you've been around at all on this planet very long, you know, you begin to see that things don't work out so well in my dream, you know. They may work out for a little while, but they certainly don't last, and the problems tend to accumulate, and the solutions tend to evaporate, right, as we go on. And you know, everything becomes more complicated and more tiring and more conflicted. And so, you know, so really what we're all longing for and deep within is, you know, yearning to find again is that beautiful, quiet, you know, just really soundless, forgotten song of our one self that is one with God, our one child of God that we still are. And we want to, you know, we want to learn that we're still welcome home, you know, that we don't, that we're not that frightened child in lesson 182 that can never find its way home and is no longer welcome in heaven. Everybody carries that belief within them. And, you know, within our relationships, we want to learn that we're welcome by learning that, that the person that seems to be our problem at any given moment is welcome too. You know, that's the only way we learn it. We go home together or not at all.
Right. Yep. This has been such a great conversation. I needed this, Susan.
I think we always need this. It is a wonderful conversation, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and since I couldn't just, like, get up in Ken's face and say, what do you mean join them? How do I join them? You know? Thank you for letting me get up in your face and ask that question.
I love it.
I mean,
we do have the forgotten song here. I suppose we could read from some of that if you want.
Okay, do you have that right in front of you?
I do.
Okay, well, go ahead and read that.
Let's see. So the forgotten song is it's in chapter 21, and it's section 1 of text. So chapter 21, section 1. It's pretty long, so I guess we could... trying to think of where I should start reading this.
Okay, I'm seeing if I can pull it up, actually.
Yeah, see if you can pull it up. Well, we could start, I think I see a paragraph that might be a good place to start, and then we could read a couple of those paragraphs and then do a final reading of the rest of it, which is just beautiful at the end, maybe.
Okay, so you're in the text, chapter 21.
Chapter 21, section 1.
Okay.
Song, and then go to paragraph 2.
Okay. All right, I'm with you.
Okay, and he says, how foolish is it to attempt to judge what could be seen instead? It is not necessary to imagine what the world must look like. It must be seen before you recognize it for what it is. So it must be seen with your right mind, right, with Jesus, before you can recognize what it really is. You can be shown which doors are open, and you can see where safety lies, and which way leads to darkness, which to light. Judgment will always give you false directions. So the ego's judgment will always give you false directions. But vision, but Jesus's, you know, we talk about Jesus's vision, which sees beyond the world and to the truth, shows you where to go. Why would you guess? Why would you trying to figure it out by yourself? Right?
Good question.
I'm going to read the second one again, okay. Or the third one. It's paragraph 3. There is no need to learn through pain, and gentle lessons are acquired joyously and are remembered gladly. Well, there may not be no need to learn through pain, but usually that is how we learn, isn't it? Because I tend to sort of have to exhaust all other possibilities before I remember I could go to Jesus.
That's right.
Right.
That in fact, do you remember Winston Churchill said something to that extent about America?
Oh, really?
In World War II, he said, one thing about the Americans is that they will always do the right thing after they've exhausted every other possibility.
Well, it's probably true of all people, but Americans are particularly headstrong, aren't we? And particularly sort of naive in that way.
Yeah.
What gives you happiness you want to learn and not forget? So this is going to help us, and we want to try to remember this, right?
Yeah.
It is not this you would deny. Your question is whether the means to find happiness by which this course is learned will bring to you the joy it promises. Okay? We often want it to bring us joy and form, right?
Uh-huh.
We want to ask Jesus to help us make the other person do what we want them to do.
Right.
Right? And have our world work out the way we want it to. If we believed that it would, that the course will bring us the joy that it promises. If we believe that it would, the learning of it would be no problem. And so he's implying that we don't believe it, right?
Yeah.
You are not a happy learner yet because you still remain uncertain that vision gives you more than judgment does, that choosing Jesus gives you more than the ego does, which is form, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have learned that both you cannot have. So, you know, at the very best, we're deeply ambivalent about this because we're afraid of the light. You know, we still think that our way might give us what we wanted, and we can have our course and our world and our life too.
Right.
As a separate individual too. The blind become accustomed to their world by their adjustments to it. Okay, we've learned to live in the dark.
Right.
You know, we like it.
Yes.
They think they know their way about in it. Right? We stumble around, but we still think that we can triumph in it, manage it. They learned it not through joyous lessons, but through the stern necessity of limits they believed they could not overcome. We're trying to always make the best of the situation. If this is what we have, well, we'll get as much as we can and try to get rid of our guilt in the process. And still believing this, they hold those lessons dear and cling to them because they cannot see. They do not understand the lessons keep them blind, the ego's lessons, that this is all real and I, you know, of giving to get, right? I can get my needs met here. I can get rid of my guilt here somehow by projecting it on other people and maybe substitute for the love that I had to give up to come here, right?
Mm-hmm.
By my idols, by trying to get my special relationships to work for me. They do not understand the lessons keep them blind. So we remain fixated on the dark, on trying to manipulate the dark world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Forgotten that we had everything. and now we're trying to, you know, we have this shabby existence that we're struggling so hard to protect and make work. So they do not understand the lessons keep them blind. These illusions keep them blind. And this personal hierarchy of my, you know, special relationships and what will work for me keeps me blind. This they do not believe. And so they keep the world they learn to see, in quotes, in their imagination, believing that their choice is that or nothing. This is all I have left. Right? That's
yeah.
It. They hate the world they learn through pain, and everything they think is in it serves to remind them that they are incomplete and bitterly deprived. Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I was just thinking, I was reading Ken's commentary on lesson, I think, 134. Mm-hmm. Just this morning, and it there was this idea, and it really did kind of hit me like a bombshell. And it's a duplicate of this. It's really a repetition because it says you come into this world believing that you have to create a self, and the self that you create by the laws of the world is so bitterly disappointing. You know,
right.
you adjust to the limits of the world. So it doesn't use the word blind, but that's it. It's like you just keep creating this self, and by the world standards, you're mature when you finally get this self that needs to be protected and is an innocent victim.
Right.
And, you know, it's like as I was reading it, I thought, oh my God, that is so sad. It's just so sad that that's it. We just keep evolving this self. And when we can truly say, I'm an innocent victim, you
right.
know, I am not responsible, that somehow is maturity in the world.
Well, that's, you know, it's, I mean, again, we all have that same, you know, once we believed that separation was real, we took it seriously. Then, you know, the guilt over that was so much more enormous than we've repressed all of this, but it's still within us circulating all the time. And now we believe we deserve punishment. And so we have to make this work. This is all we have left.
Right.
You know, we had it coming. And so he says, thus they define their life and where they live, adjusting to it as they think they must, afraid to lose the little that they have. And so it is with all who see the body as all they have and all their brothers have. They try to reach each other and they fail and fail again. Bodies can't join. You know, we try to substitute for the love with each other. And it can't work because each of us believes we're innocent victims of the other because we're projecting our guilt on each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they adjust to loneliness. There's that lesson 182 again, you know?
Yeah.
Never find my way home. God will never take me back. Believing that to keep the body is to save the little that they have. And then he goes on to say, listen and try to think if you remember what we will speak of now. And then he goes on to read this beautiful forgotten song. Do we have a little more time to read a few more?
I think we have a couple more minutes, but I'll tell you what, I'm just like sitting here really in awe. because, you know, once again, I've read the text several times and I'm just looking at this going, oh my God, we adjust
right
to this little tiny thing and this is all we've got. And I'm so afraid of losing this little thing. It's like I have so downplayed my expectations, really.
Absolutely.
It's sad. It's so sad.
Really?
So go ahead. Go ahead, Susan.
And we defend it to the death, right?
Mm-hmm.
I exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. You know, I didn't ask to come here. We forgot the beginning of this story. We just know the middle, and it
right
sucks.
Right. Okay, so we've got a couple more minutes.
Yeah,
so
let's not leave people in that dark place.
That's right. I mean, we are sad, but I mean, on the other hand, that's the light. Oh my God, why am I existing for this? Go ahead, Susan.
He says, listen, perhaps you catch a hint of an ancient state not quite forgotten, dim perhaps, and yet not altogether unfamiliar, like a song whose name is long forgotten, and the circumstances in which you heard completely unremembered. Not the whole song has stayed with you, but just a little wisp of melody attached not to a person or a place or anything particular. But you remember from just this little part how lovely was the song, how wonderful the setting where you heard it, and how you loved those who were there and listened with you. The notes are nothing, yet you have kept them with you, not for themselves, but as a soft reminder of what would make you weep if you remembered how dear it was to you. You could remember, yet you are afraid, believing you would lose the world you learned since then, and yet you know that nothing in the world you learned is half so dear as this. Listen and see if you remember an ancient song you knew so long ago and held more dear than any melody you taught yourself to cherish since. And we probably don't have time to read this, the rest of this whole thing, but that's that beautiful, Melos that's calling to us. You know, we believe we don't deserve to answer that song, to go toward that song, to move toward that song, but it's really calling all of us home. And we just want to be told in our relationships that we're wrong about ourselves, that we deserve to follow that song. You know, and so that's really what we've been talking about today is trying to begin to hear the block to that song, the fear of that song in each of our, in ourselves, and to really instead step back to the mind with Jesus and, you know, get our egos out of the way, our own block out of the way, and learn that we're all deserving of that song and we're all going to find our way to it eventually. And then we communicate to each other that we all are welcome in that music.
Yeah. And I am, before we wrap, I am going to read this one paragraph that
sure,
where you left off, because it is so incredibly beautiful. Beyond the body, beyond the sun and stars, past everything you see and yet somehow familiar, is an arc of golden light that stretches as you look into a great and shining circle. And all the circle fills with light before your eyes. The edges of the circle disappear, and what is in it is no longer contained at all. The light expands and covers everything, extending to infinity, forever shining and with no break or limit anywhere. Within it, everything is joined in perfect continuity. Nor is it possible to imagine that anything could be outside, for there is nowhere that this light is not.
that beautiful?
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you suggested we read this. This is beautiful. Really, this has made my day. Thank you so much, Susan.
You're welcome. Well, thank you, Ken. Thank you, Sia, for recommending that we do this. And thank you, Ken, for the idea of this. But yes, the Forgotten Song is so beautiful, you know, and yet it scares us, you know. And yet it scares us. But that's where this is leading us. And I think within us, we know that's what we really want. You know, we just don't want to. I mean, I know that we hear it, we feel it, and we're still afraid of it. So we have to be patient and gentle with ourselves and recognize that, you know, that Jesus doesn't judge our fear, and you know, but keep remembering that we can ask to go join with him.
Right.
And then we can reflect in our relationships that song.
Okay. All right. Well, Susan, before we wrap, do you have any announcements that you'd like to make?
No, except that the Foundation for A Course in Miracles is, I had been so busy with moving and everything that I just began to listen to some of the they're new to me, seminars that Jeff Siebert has done in the last couple of months, and there's a couple of all-day seminars that he did that are available now as podcasts on the streaming section of the Foundation's website, and I highly recommend them, and I'm looking forward to listening to more myself. And so, you know, that's a wonderful resource. There's always they always have sorts of, I noticed, I haven't read them yet, but they had new announcements that just came out, which usually means that they also are offering some great deals in the bookstore and some new, you know, streaming deals perhaps. So I would recommend that everyone, you know, check that out.
Okay. All right. And for those of you who may not know, that is the Foundation for A Course in Miracles, which is www.facim.org. And also, I would kind of encourage you to go over to YouTube and watch those videos, those videos that we were talking about. Although, I also want you to keep joining me here on Friday mornings as we listen to Ken's workshop, Healing, Hearing the Melody. And you can find Susan at www.forayasinforgiveness.com. That's FORAYS. inforgiveness.com. And I will post that over in our private group over on Facebook. And so, everybody, thank you for joining me today. Thanks for listening and for all your comments over on Facebook. And thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. I hope that you will keep it tuned to 1-2 Radio, where we have a lot of live programming and just a lot of good stuff to listen to, some encouraging things. You can find me on 1-2listen.com for personal readings and consultations. And you can always find me here on Friday mornings and find me on Tuesday mornings, where I'm talking astrology, one of my favorite illusions, or should I say delusions, I don't know, in this dream world. So I hope you have a great week, and thanks a lot for listening. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest Susan Dugan on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.